Hello, everyone, and welcome to Police Off the Cuff Real Crime Stories. I'm your host, retired NYPD Sergeant Bill Cannon, a 27-year veteran of the NYPD. You know, folks, this Micah Miller story, it's such a sad, sad story. And, you know, we found out some information. We actually knew it yesterday, but the details were not available. Now the details are available, and it appears that the gunshot wound was a self-inflicted gunshot wound. And I know people still don't want to believe that. They want to believe that the husband, John Paul Miller, who's the pastor of the Solid Rock Church, they want to believe that he had something to do with this. And in a way, he had everything to do with this except the act. His actions and the fact that they were going through a divorce directly led to Micah taking her own life. This 30-year-old beautiful woman that had everything to live for somehow didn't see a way out, didn't see a way out of this relationship, didn't see a way out of her pain, and took her own life. You know, this picture you see up on the screen, that is her at the pawn shop buying a 9mm Sig Sauer semi-automatic handgun. And we'll go over the evidence. You know, not only do they have video of her purchasing the gun, but they have that same box sitting in her car. They have the receipt for the handgun. The handgun they recovered, of course, has the same exact serial number as the box that they found in her car. So there's a lot of things, and we'll connect the dots. And we want to say also that, you know, may Micah Miller rest in peace. And it's not lost on us or anyone that follows this show that this is a horrific tragedy. And we want to look into this. And myself, as a sergeant in the NYPD Manhattan North Homicide Squad and in the Detective Bureau for 16 years, I've been to a lot of suicide scenes. And it's a horrific scene that you never want to see. And especially someone this young with so much to live for. It's really disheartening that this occurred. So, folks, hang on to your hats. You're about to enter true crime from a police perspective. You're about to enter the off-the-cuff zone, the police off-the-cuff zone.
There has to be some common sense.
Yes, sir. They have the car stopped in 10th and Grant's bike fire.
We still don't know who pulled the trigger.
Folks, I'm going to introduce our special guest tonight. He's actually back from a short hiatus of about a month or so. And you guys know him because he's been on this show for 2 or 3 years. I'm pleased and happy to have with me tonight, because it's always much easier to have a co-host that you can bounce things off of. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome to the show retired NYPD detective Phil Grimaldi, straight out of Brooklyn, Detective Phil Grimaldi. Phil, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Billy. Thank you for that great introduction. I really glad to be back. Had a little hiatus, but I'm back, and we're ready to dig into this case.
I think the fans, the subscribers, and our friends are glad to see you. They're getting tired of just hearing me, but
love them.
I'm glad to see you too. Anyway, Phil, this is a really tragic, tragic case. And up until today, I think that many people wanted to believe that this man on the right, John Paul Miller, who's the pastor of the Solid Rock Church, that he is responsible for Micah's death. Can we say he still is? That perhaps his conduct, perhaps their relationship, perhaps what was so wrong in their marriage caused her to do this. We could perhaps say that. But I don't think after the report put out by the medical examiner, after the investigation done by the police, by the local police there, I don't think you can say that he even remotely pulled the trigger.
You know, Billy, it's very, very sad, as you said early on when you went into the introduction of this case. Suicide is not something that happens on a daily basis in a family. A lot of times I've had, friends, relatives, and on the job that had, issues with depression, and, they get to the edge, and a lot of times we're able to pull them back before they actually would go through with the act. However, you and I both investigated many cases over the years of being in the NYPD Detective Bureau of suicide. It's very, very shocking a lot of times. A lot of times there are no signs, there are no signals, no red flags. However, other times there are. But when you started to get into this case, and by the way, my condolences to the family of Micah Miller. Obviously, this is a very tragic time for them. And even though she was going through the marital issues, I'm sure that both families are mourning the loss of this young life. But as you got into this case and you heard some of the details, a person that's going through marital issues, perhaps there could be a motive for foul play in a case like this when a person is found dead. But I think that once we get through, and you and I did some research on this, once we get through what we're going to talk about tonight, there's a lot of clear indicators. Facts, evidences, videos, examination by the medical examiner that is definitely going to point to a suicide, unfortunately.
This is Micah Miller talking in a video that was posted on Facebook, and you could see that she is definitely in crisis here. And I want to play this on the screen here.
So today my heart's a little heavy. I've had a lot of women that have reached out to me about situations of abuse. And I just want to tell you what a lot of people have told me lately and reminded me, because I think I forgot. I knew, but I pushed it in the back of my head just because of my situation. But you are the bride of Christ. Before anybody else's bride, male or female, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what gender you are. Abuse is abuse. And you are the bride of Christ. And my Bible says that he took all the abuse you could think of for you so that you didn't have to live that life of slavery and bondage and pain. Jesus took it all for you. So you don't have to stay in a abusive relationship, whether that's sexual, whether that's somebody forcing you to take illegal drugs or alcohol abuse or physical abuse, psychological abuse, making you think that this is all your fault, or you're a bad mom, or you're a bad wife, or you're a bad husband, or you're not giving it your all when you know you are. God hates divorce, but why? According to everybody I've asked and the scriptures that I've found, it's because it hurts people. But does abuse hurt people? How do you think God feels about that? So I want to remind you, like a bunch of people have been reminding me lately, that I'm God's bride first. And even an earthly spouse who's a good spouse, when they know that their bride is being hurt, just imagine what an earthly spouse does. What do you think your heavenly spouse does when you're the bride of Christ and he sees his bride going through abuse and hurt? what you think he thinks about that. So encouragement in all this is you are the bride of Christ first before anybody else's. And he's got you. And he sees you. And he loves you.
So that's, I mean, obviously she was in crisis.
Absolutely.
Big time crisis. She's reaching out. I wish that, and of course it's way after the fact, that someone could have helped her when they realized that she was in this crisis. Some of the things in this case that make us suspicious, she also had someone who was stalking her, who had slashed her tires on her car twice with a device that was like bought, specifically made to do that. And this person also put a tracking device in her car. The police redacted the name from the complaint report so that it wasn't available to the public. But I'm wondering, was that person her husband? And the police just redacted it, and they're not letting us know that. Was that John Miller, the pastor of the church? And they, was he tormenting her? Was he stalking her? He already had a girlfriend. I had a girlfriend during their marriage. So she had filed for divorce very recently. So she was undoubtedly in crisis. And we could see when we watched that video what level of crisis she was in. Phil.
You know, Billy, you just look at that video. She talks about several things there. She talks about abuse. It sounded like, I mean, she didn't use the word physical abuse, but it sounded like physical abuse to me. She talked about narcotic use, forced narcotic use. She talked about alcohol. So she was obviously someone in crisis. You know, she was leaning on the religion, so to speak. She was saying, you know, everyone is a bride of Christ. And I get all of that. It sounds to me like she didn't have someone as a support that she could reach out to pull her out of the situation. Sounds like she needed to be pulled out of the situation, and perhaps she felt lost. And as we know from, you know, any kind of training we got regard to suicides, a lot of times the individual's going through deep internal pain. They're conflicted. They have immense pain. They have no place to go. And a lot of times they need that support net, that safety net to help them. There is, as we've talked about in numerous other domestic violence cases, there are support groups. There is help out there. But I don't know why she didn't reach for that help. She seemed like she was lost. And she was, again, in that video. It's really chilling. It's really sad, too, to think such a beautiful young person took their own life based on what was going on in their life. And, you know, recently somebody said something to me that when it comes to suicide, you make a definite and final decision on something that's temporary. The situation she was in, point being, the situation that she was in was only a temporary situation. However, she made a final decision that could not be turned back. And that's the unfortunate thing when it comes to suicide.
Well, yeah, the saying is it's a permanent solution to a temporary problem.
That's it.
It's no solution whatsoever. It's the wrong decision to make. And I always quote Dr. Stephen Washkel, who I have tremendous respect for. He's known as the he's a suicide expert, and he works with the NYPD a lot. And he always said, and he's been on this show numerous times, but years ago, and he always said, if you've seen one suicide, you've seen one suicide. In essence, they're all different.
Absolutely.
And you can't just group them together and say, you know, they all have this commonality thing. And that's not true. But you would think that Micah Miller, she had such faith in God that she would have maybe have turned toward God rather than to taking her own life. And that's what's so, so disheartening about this. I'm going to play this from News Nation, and then we're going to go over some of the evidence in this case.
Respondent Rich McHugh has been on the ground all day long in South Carolina. He joins us now with the very latest. What have you learned, Rich?
Hi, Elizabeth. Well, it's the news that nobody here in Myrtle Beach wanted to hear. Many in her circle are in stunned disbelief. The Robeson County Sheriff confirming just hours ago that Surveillance photos and the 911 call confirmed that Micah Miller did take her life. They just released a statement I want to read. While I know it's not what many people wanted to hear, the evidence is quite clear and compelling, and we are as saddened as anyone that this occurred. Before this news, her husband, John Paul, sent me this text message. I have never once in my life ever hurt her in any way, ever. Her close friends are devastated and stunned, saying she gave no indication that she was at all suicidal. Take a look.
She had a hair appointment this week. She had plans to attend church with them on Sunday. So the news, when I heard it, it was just, I thought it was just some kind of terrible misunderstanding. Because she was headed in a positive direction and she was making plans and had a new purpose that she was pursuing. She was loving her job, everything.
But they say there was a lot of darkness in her life. She had just filed for divorce 2 days before her death, just filed police reports because someone had slashed her tires, and she found a GPS tracking device on her car. She even filed a note.
That is what I was referring to. Might the person who slashed her tires and might the person who put the GPS tracking device in her car be her husband? They're not saying that right now. The police know who it is, obviously.
Yeah.
But that is something that perhaps they don't want out there. Is it a second person? I'm sort of getting the feeling that that person is her husband. And I could be wrong. It's a hunch that I have. And that's, I mean, why wouldn't they release this person's name? If he was tracking her, he put a GPS device and he slashed the tires twice. Why would they be protecting him?
Well, you know, Billy, I don't know who it is, but it sounds like whoever it was, that may have been the thing that put her over the edge. And perhaps they not releasing that name, because there could be criminal charges. I mean, you can't put a tracking device on someone's car. You need to have permission or authority or ownership of the vehicle to do something like that. And I'm not sure of the laws in North Carolina or South Carolina, but there's a thing called illegal surveillance. And when you put a tracking device on a car, it's a felony, and perhaps there could be charges. And if they have video evidence of a person engaging this this thing on the tire that you can buy over the internet, putting that on the tire and causing the two flats that were that happened to this young lady, they could also do a search to see who purchased that item. So if someone close to her or someone was stalking her and purchased that item and then caused, flat tires on the car, which would be criminal mischief, there could be charges coming forward for that person. So all of these things that were going on, there's a lot of variables. What it could be, it could be the husband, could be someone else, it could be maybe someone she was romantically involved with. We don't know at this point. We can't jump to conclusions because they didn't release it. But I think it's a good possibility. It could be the husband. Who knows? Although they said that he had a girlfriend and that they were in court, filing for divorce and such. So I don't know if he had the motive to do that.
You never want someone as much as when the threat of losing them is in your face. And all of a sudden, he probably doesn't want to let her go. And I'm reading into this, but I just have a hunch that that person and John Miller are one and the same. I'm just thinking that. Raggedy Hobo from the chat. This poor lady, I lost my wife to suicide 10 years ago. She struggled with it before we met. Very secretive too. Sigh. Raggedy Hobo, I'm sorry for your loss.
I already hear that, yes.
So tragic when someone takes their own life. And we, as former police officers, we saw many of our compadres.
I'm just going to bring that up, Billy. I'm glad you brought that up.
I think the profession that is number one probably on the list of suicide is police officers. And then, there's other professions that are very high, including doctors. I don't have the exact profession list, but police are right up there. I think they may even be number one. And most of the time in the police service, cops kill themselves with their firearm because it's readily available to them. And once you pull that trigger, there's absolutely no turning back from that decision.
So. I'm so glad you brought that up, Bill, because we all the time that we had on the job, yes, there was a lot of close friends, and even now that I'm retired, people that have committed suicide that I know. And a lot of times, one in particular I could think of, a particular guy, I don't want to mention his name, but he was such a funny guy, easygoing guy, and you know, to think that he committed suicide, he shot himself in his home. When I thought about it, he was like, when you think about people that maybe have problems, marital, psychological, whatever, you know, drinkers, alcohol, this was the last guy that I thought would do something like that. But he was in a crisis with his marriage, and he decided to take his own life. And a lot of times what I talk about when I talk about suicide is that, you know, I don't think there's enough stress put on the trail of disaster that you leave behind. Now, you're not in pain anymore. The person that commits the act, they're not in pain. However, all the close family members, friends, those are the ones that are left to deal with the, you know, the remnants of the suicide. And not long ago, I kind of spoke with an ex-colleague that was in a depressed state and had actually called the suicide hotline. And I had said to her, but, you know, why didn't you reach out to me? or somebody else. And she was just at the point where she said the walls were just closing in. There was so much going on that I didn't care. And I was saying, you know, about children and family and grandchildren and stuff. And at that moment, nothing mattered. So I kind of got taken back by that, because I always thought that if you stress that to somebody that is in that crisis mode, that's thinking of taking their own life, and you can bring that fact and make them think about that, yeah, you're going to be out of pain, but look what you're going to leave in the rearview mirror, the family, the friends, the hurt, the brokenness. But when I spoke with this particular individual at that moment, didn't really think about that, was thinking about, I just want to get out of this pain.
Absolutely. Fun size. Just lost my nephew Friday. We got the call and found deceased. Waiting for the investigation to be completed now. Heartbroken and devastated. I feel for Micah and her family. Fun size, we feel for you. We're very sorry.
Condolences.
I hope that being in the chat and with this community here, when people reveal things that are very painful, I hope it's somewhat therapeutic. And I'm not saying it's going to help you heal, but perhaps it'll make you feel a little bit better, at least in the time that you're here. It's such a suicide is just such a horrific thing. Let me go back to the News Nation recording here.
No contact restraining order against, according to police records, but it's unknown if it was for JP. Police had redacted the name on the report. In March, she posted on Facebook some advice for anyone struggling with leaving an abusive situation. Here she is.
You don't have to stay in a abusive relationship, whether that's sexual, whether that's somebody forcing you to take illegal drugs or alcohol abuse.
Was that happening to her? Why did she mention that someone forcing you to take illegal drugs, unless that in fact was happening to her? Because that sort of just came out of left field, didn't it?
Absolutely.
And but she brings that up. Let me go back to her.
Or physical abuse, psychological abuse, making you think that this is all your fault, or you're a bad mom, or you're a bad wife, or you're a bad husband, or you're not giving it your all when you know you are.
Billy, could you stop it there for a second? I just wanted to make a comment about that. That psychological abuse, you know, that's something that a lot of people, when you hear about abusive relationships, domestic violence, it's violence, it's hitting it. But you could be a victim of psychological abuse as well, mind games. And that's what I was getting at. Perhaps maybe somebody was putting these things on the car to give it a flat, to cause more strife in her life, more anxiety, more depression. It's really, really terrible to think about that type of stuff, but that's a real thing, psychological abuse. You know, I've heard counselors talk about with regard to domestic violence, physical abuse, psychological abuse and sexual abuse. And those three are the big three when it comes to domestic violence. So that psychological abuse. And, you know, I mean, sometimes it could be something as easy as just telling a lie to a person and making them think, well, no, I did that. No, you didn't. And now you're lying to that person. You're causing confusion in their mind. And if they have a little bit of depression, they're going through a rough patch, marital issues. These are all the things that can build up and lead a person down that dark, dark path.
Absolutely. Lieutenant Peter Pranzo, law enforcement followed by the military, gun at hand, years back, averaged anywhere from 8 to 13 per year on the NYPD. I remember that, Lieutenant Pete.
Absolutely.
And it was a horrible thing. And I used to go to a lot of them and being in Manhattan North Homicide, and nothing worse than going to the suicide of a fellow cop. Just absolutely horrific, and nothing can prepare you for that.
Now, challenges her close friend, who has asked us not to use her name, says Micah was definitely struggling with. Take a look.
I know she'd been struggling. She's gotten three different numbers, or she's had three different numbers in the last 3 months, trying to make sure that he did not get her phone number and could not get in contact with her. She messaged me saying, you know, thank you for your gentle warnings over the years about you.
Who? Like, that's a husband. She changed her number three times. So who do you think was slashing her tires? Who do you think put the tracking device in her car? I'm saying it's him, you know? And here you have it. She changed her number three times because he was obviously stalking her.
JP, or my relationship with JP, you know, I know that you knew I wasn't ready to get out yet, but I've replayed our combos over and over in our head throughout the years, and wished there was a way I could get out, and now I have, with a big smiley face.
Now, the sentiment here again among friends that this does not feel like closure, given all that she went through. Elizabeth?
Yeah, Rich, the friends are all saying that she was in an abusive relationship. She appears to be saying that in her own the selfie video that she posted. And then there was that bizarre series of videos of the preacher, her ex, soon to be ex-husband, JP, on the, you know, in the church, giving a series of what can only be described as bizarre sermons, where he talks first, announces to the congregation that my wife is dead, just a couple hours ago she killed herself, then talks about shooting people because you're so angry. Those videos were taken down rather quickly. They're no longer available online, but that really is what spurred all the interest and suspicion in this case.
Yeah, there's so much under the hood here, Elizabeth, depending on which side you talk to. You talk to people who are aligned with him, JP, and you get one story. People who are aligned with her, and you get a completely different story. There's so much going on. That's why everybody was so frustrated that this was the news today, that this was the end.
All right.
But this is not the end for the people on her side.
Thanks so much.
So, a lot of information in that little snippet we just heard. And I'm almost now even more convinced that he's the one that was stalking her, changing her number three times. I mean, that sounds like, you know, again, that he's the one that was stalking her. I want to play. This is really heartbreaking. I want to play the 911 call that Micah made. And it really is unbelievably hard. And you listen to the 911 operator and see if what you think, how well of a job she did or poor of a job she did.
Robinson County 911, what's the address of your emergency?
Hi, are you able to trace the location of my phone?
You don't know where you're at?
A national park.
What's the phone number you're calling me from?
843-655-5242.
Where's the park located at?
In Bear Bluff. I have my location on, I think, on my phone. Find my phone is on. Just did my share my location.
Okay, I'm showing.
Sounded like she was crying there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you are in Robinson County.
Surprised she's not trying to get what the call's about yet.
Yeah, that's why, I mean, I don't want to...
The Lumber River State Park?
Yeah, that's where I am.
She's not asking her what's the emergency.
I'm about to kill myself, and I just want my family to know where to find me.
Okay, ma'am. Just listen to what I'm saying, okay? Let me make sure I got the exact location where you're at, okay? Just 1 minute.
Wow. I just cannot believe that reaction. Like, aren't they trained to try to talk the person out of it?
That's
what did you just say, miss? No, don't do that.
No, right.
Please, let me get you help. You know,
yes, please.
That would have been the correct reaction to it, but she seems like a very...
I don't think she's very experienced.
No, I was just going to say that. A very inexperienced 9/11 operator. Like, if someone tells you, oh, I want my family to know where I am because I'm going to kill myself. I mean, then there's silence. Well, I mean, what was she thinking of? I want to go to the chat because someone in the chat said something very important. With James, I live in South Carolina in Florence. The restraining order was against JP, that's her husband, and he'd been tracking her for months along with slashing her tires. They found the trackers when she went in to fix the tires. So I was correct with that's who it was. Who it was against the husband? You know, Whit, I'm going to put in the chat. I'm going to put a link to the StreamYard. If you want to come on as a guest, since you're from that area, if you know a lot about this case, if you want to join us on the show, you're very welcome because you're a person from that community. I'm sure you've heard a lot of the people talking about this. You know a lot about it. And again, if you don't want to, that's fine also. But I'm extending this invitation to you. So, you know, here's my old cop instincts. I just figured it had to be the husband who was stalking her. And she didn't see a way out. And she was tortured by this. Yeah, I could see you guys in the chat reacting to this. And yet, you know, he almost like made a joke from the pulpit. This is a man of the cloth, you know. It's really horrific to believe this all occurred.
Billy, I want to make a comment about the 911 call real quick. I mean, I don't want to criticize the 911 operator. She may be, not handling many calls. I don't know if it's very busy there, but I know that, you know, and I'm going to go by my NYPD experience and training and background, the NYPD operators that handle numerous calls, I think would have been more keyed in to try and say, well, first thing they say is, where's the emergency? And she's saying, I'm lost. I'm in a park. Can you tell what my location is? Why are you lost? I mean, she wasn't engaging. I'm not trying to be a Monday morning quarterback. Believe me, I'm not. But perhaps she doesn't get very many 911 calls. But there was a lot of time there.
You can't make light of it. She did a horrible job.
There was
on the phone, I'm going to kill myself, and your reaction is dead air.
Well, even before that, though, she could have engaged her. What's the problem? What's the emergency? Where are you lost? And then once she said she wanted to kill herself, she should have been engaging. Listen, man, please let me help you. Stay on the line. Let's talk. There's always, you know, something. And she kind of said, well, all right, hold on. Like, I mean, maybe she didn't hear her. I don't know. I don't want to be critical, but I just think that there was a lot of time there that she was on that phone call, you know, and then we even played the whole thing.
I'm going to kill myself. that's the time to jump right into action. You cannot, right. You cannot pause. You cannot stall. You have to immediately hold it. Stop. Let me help you. Don't think that's, don't do that. You know,
she needed to focus in on that woman to try and save her. And at the same time, be getting help, whether it be through her computer, get a radio car there, get people there. I mean, she was saying she knew the location. She even said she repeated the Robinson County Park, the Lumber River State Park. She repeated. So they knew where she was. And God forgive me, I don't want to put it on anyone, but I just feel like there was help there. She was calling for help, you know, even though she was saying, I want them to find me. That was that last call.
Boy, I think she may have been able to be talked out of it.
Exactly.
Experienced exactly. Time. One operator said, no, don't do that.
Yes.
Please, don't do that. And, you know, look, I can't help. She did. Look, she's probably brand new. She's
exactly. With our experience, we probably, I don't know if we could have talked her out of it, but we might have been able to.
I would have jumped into try. Susan G., I thought it sounded like she was trying to keep her on the phone longer by saying, oh, well, hold on just a minute. Let me double check that. No way.
You got to engage. I would have been asking her about her family. That would be the first thing. Well, where are your loved ones? And bring them into it. So that way you could talk about that and what's going on. You know, listen, I know it's easy to Monday morning quarterback and I don't want to get too far into it, but it just really struck me to hear. That was the first time I heard that, Billy. And, you know, knowing what we know now, and I just feel like, I don't know, maybe because it's the NYPD and we get so many calls, they might have been a little bit more keyed in.
Absolutely. Lizzie Herzberger, Behind Blue Curtains. You guys got to get her book. You can get it on Amazon. She's the Amish woman that wrote a blockbuster book. I read it 2 years ago. Lizzie, thank you so much for the 1999 super sticker. I'll put in the chat the name of your book. But Lizzie knows.
She's a survivor. She's
a survivor. And she knows all about what we are talking about. That's the name of her book. I just put in the chat. You know, guys, we're not here really to Monday morning quarterback the 911 operator, but right. When we hear, like, you know, someone's life probably could have been saved in this situation. And I don't want to throw it all on the 911 operator, but I found that her reaction to this needed to be quick and needed to be Johnny on the spot, as they say. The lady Kara, thank you for your assessment, guys. It's always appreciated. My hearts go out to the Robeson County deputies and the state park rangers that had to address this tragic incident. You know, the lady Kara, we both myself and Phil being NYPD, myself for 27 years, Phil for 21, 22. We went to jobs like this all the time, and it's never easy. And, you know, I've seen kids 19, 20, 21 years old commit suicide. And it's those pictures stay in your brain. And sometimes they wake you up in the middle of the night, you know, and that's called PTSD, you know, post-traumatic stress syndrome. You know, we always think about it. Melissa B, a lot of hesitation. Yeah. The Net Owl, training in many places, taking a backseat these days. It costs money, time to stop, but the business approach to human situations. You know, Net Owl, you're 100% correct. With the whole, and without getting political, the whole defund the police thing, the first thing that goes is the money for training.
Training
costs so much money. Yep. And it's, but training is so, so, so important. And, you know, now that we know, and let's get to the evidence.
Let's go into that.
The actual document. I'm going to put it up on the screen. I'm going to go through it because I believe there's still many people that think that there's still a possibility that the husband did this. And I think when we read this, a death investigation that has tugged on the hearts of people across the nation has been ruled a suicide. The decision was based on surveillance footage, interviews, physical evidence, and the examination of the North Carolina Medical Examiner's Office.
Billy, stop right there for a second. Just read back. I'm going to read back. Surveillance footage, interviews, physical evidence, and the examination of the North Carolina Medical Examiner's Office. That is powerful right there, that one sentence.
Well, one of the things that even in this whole report, they indicate it's a self-inflicted gunshot wound. They never say the location of that right. gunshot wound. So that's something they're still keeping quiet. On Saturday, April 27, 2024, at approximately 2:54 p.m., Robeson County Emergency 911 Communications Center received a 911 call from a female. The caller asked the dispatcher if her phone could be located because she was going to kill herself and wanted her family to be able to find her body. During the conversation with the dispatcher, the caller hung up the phone and the dispatcher was unable to contact the caller. The dispatcher was able to find the location of the caller and dispatched the deputy to the location. The deputies contacted the Lumber River State Park superintendent, and upon their arrival at Lumber River State Park in Orem, North Carolina, the deputies and the state park rangers conducted a search of the area for the victim. The search was aided by a Robeson County Sheriff's Office drone. During the investigation, a black Honda Accord with a South Carolina registration was located in the parking lot at the state park. The investigators confirmed that the vehicle belonged to Micah Miller, 30, of Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Investigators located a six-hour gun case in the passenger seat of the vehicle and a box of ammunition in the center console of the vehicle. Investigators also found a receipt for the six-hour handgun from a pawn shop and a receipt from a convenience store in the vehicle. Both receipts were dated for the same day of Miller's death, April 27, 2024. During the search of the park for the 911 caller, investigators were approached by an individual who had found a bag near the water edge with an identification belonging to Micah Miller. The individual stated that he heard someone crying and a gunshot while he was fishing. Law enforcement continued the search, and emergency 911 received a call from an individual who stated that a body was located in the water. Law enforcement responded to the location and contacted the North Carolina Medical Examiner's Office upon locating the deceased. The victim was identified as Micah Miller. A Sig Sauer 9mm handgun was located in the water at the crime scene during the search of the area. The serial number on the weapon matched the gun box that was found in Miller's Honda Accord. During the investigation, Miller's phone and other personal belongings were located. A search of Miller's phone revealed that she conducted a Google search for national parks near me, and the Lumber River State Park location was provided. The investigation also revealed that Miller and her estranged husband, John Paul Miller, had been separated and were involved in the legal system. This information led to the investigators confirming the whereabouts of Miller and a female that he is allegedly romantically involved with. Investigators were able to confirm that both individuals were not in North Carolina on the night before and the day of Micah Miller's death. Investigators learned through interviews that John Paul Miller was at an athletic event in Charleston on the day of Micah Miller's death. John Miller's vehicle was observed traveling on Highway 17 bypassing Horry County at 2:22 p.m. on April 27, 2024. The investigation confirmed that John Miller was accompanied while traveling to and from the event in Charleston, South Carolina. On Tuesday, May 7, 2024, Sheriff Bernice Wilkins, investigators and the medical examiner met with the parents and immediate family members of Micah Miller. John Paul Miller was given the opportunity to attend a separate meeting, and Miller indicated through his attorney that he would not come to North Carolina to meet with investigators. Investigators conducted several interviews and developed a timeline of events in relation to Miller's death. I mean, I think this is it's pretty damn thorough. I could go over the timeline, which I'll do a little bit later on, but I just want to stop for a second because the husband didn't do it, obviously. He's got an ironclad alibi.
He was in another state, yeah.
He was in another state. There's actually almost an eyeball witness. There's an ear witness to it.
Yes.
So how close was the ear witness? Was the ear witness close enough to be an eyewitness? He heard crying. And then he heard a gunshot. So if he would have heard crying and heard a gunshot, if there was someone else other than Micah, that person would have been seen fleeing the scene. And then we don't know the physical evidence that was recovered by the medical examiner and recovered by the investigators that arrived on the scene. Did they recover the spent shell? I'm not sure. I don't see that in this. But there's a substantial evidence also in, you know, in this whole report. Just, I'd like to go through a little bit more of the timeline.
I was going to say there's a few more things in there, Billy. You know, when they're talking about, they have the video of her purchasing the firearm. They have the Ring camera, her leaving the house, coming back to the house. That's probably the time frame when they think she bought the firearm. Right. All of these different things. So with all of that said, they don't talk about a suicide note. Perhaps she did something in text, email, because she did have a phone with her. We know that she made the 911 call. She was talking about her phone. So they don't make mention of any of that. Usually in suicide cases, that's kind of kept very confidential, usually only for the immediate family members. I don't think something like that would be made public unless there was some type of a FOIA request or something like that. So I think maybe we should, why don't we do a survey in the chat, Bill, to see what the people that are in the chat think. Maybe a one, if they believe it's a suicide, and a two, if they think it's not a suicide. What do you think, Bill?
Yeah, let me just answer someone in the chat. Are you going to listen to the rest of the call? I played the entire 911 call. It was basically cut off once the shooting happened. So there was no more of the 911 call. I played the what was left in its entirety. Folks, is there anyone in the chat that is not satisfied with this investigation and believes that John Paul Miller could still be the killer in this case? If you think that John Paul Miller could still have been the killer of his wife, Micah Miller, put a one in the chat. If you think and you believe that the medical examiner's report is accurate, the investigator's report is accurate, and this was a case of a self-inflicted gunshot wound, thus a suicide, put a two in the chat. I'm just wondering if people are still hanging on to it that that it's, you know, it's a possibility. And we're going to get into a little more the psychological abuse here. Lizzie Herzberger, have you thought about it that she could have been at gunpoint from her estranged husband during this phone? Lizzie, they proved that he had an ironclad alibi, that he was not in the state, and they could do that in several ways, through toll booth cameras, through his own cell phone. But the investigators pretty much proved that he couldn't have been there.
There's going to be eyewitness testimony as well to his alibi where he was. I'm sure there'll could be video footage at the location, but they do have his plate around similar to the time that the actual suicide took place or the 911 call took place in another state. So I guess they were satisfied. There was enough, like you just said, Billy, for the investigators to rule him out as being present at the time when the suicide took place.
Absolutely. Folks, this is Police Off the Cuff, Real Crime Stories. If you like real crime, true crime from a police perspective, then go on our YouTube, hit that subscribe button, give us a thumbs up, ring the bell, hit the like button, share us with your friends and family. If you want to contribute to us financially, we have a Patreon with three different levels, and we also have a YouTube channel membership with, count them, five different levels. And we appreciate all of our fans, our friends that help to contribute to this show. And we really appreciate everything they do. Let me just go quickly through the timeline. At 10:13 a.m., Miller was observed on a Ring camera leaving her residence on Margarita Drive, Myrtle Beach. 11 a.m., Miller was observed on a Ring camera arriving at her residence. 11:38, Miller was observed on a Ring camera leaving her residence. 12:12 p.m., Miller is observed on store surveillance walking into Dick's Pawn Shop, which is located at 1852 Mr. Joe White Avenue, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Miller is observed at the register and initiates the purchase of a weapon. That's at 12:13. 12:34, Miller is observed leaving Dick's Pawn Shop after purchasing a weapon and ammunition. 1:06 p.m., Miller's black Honda Accord is observed traveling on Highway 501 near 4 Mile Road, Conway, South Carolina. 1:27, Miller's black Honda Accord is observed arriving at 41 Grocery and Grill, which is located at 41 SC 41 Mullins, South Carolina. 1:35, Miller is observed leaving the store after purchasing a drink and gas. 2:54 p.m., Miller called Robeson County from Lumber River State Park. The Lumber River State Park is 32.7 miles or 41 minutes from 41 Grocery and Grill in Mullins via South Carolina 9 North. So all that whole timeline, including her purchasing the weapon, is all covered in this. And it's, you know, I think it's, there's more that the investigators have that's not covered in this. There's more information. There's more evidence. They didn't go through any of the physical or the medical evidence. As I said earlier, they never indicated where the gunshot wound was. They just said, we believe she took her own life via a self-inflicted gunshot wound. They never told us where on the body that self-inflicted gunshot wound was, Phil.
Billy, with regard to one of the people in the chat that said that, could it be that she was being held at gunpoint when she made the 911 call? And I'll debunk that by saying when she went into the store to buy the drink, she was by herself. Video proved that. When she went into the store to purchase the gun, she was by herself. Had she been, being forced into that situation, she probably would have asked for help at those two locations. I think all indications from what I'm seeing, I don't have access to the case folder. We always say this, but all indications from what I'm seeing, there's enough evidence in this report that we have, and you just read, Bill, that I'm satisfied to think that it was a self-inflicted gunshot wound and a suicide. And then, like you just stated, Billy, perhaps there are many other things that are not in the report. Some smaller details, perhaps some bigger details, some smaller evidence, perhaps some larger evidence that's not being released. Like I talked about earlier, perhaps some type of either a suicide note or a text message talking about killing herself. So with all of that said, I, as an investigator, am satisfied based on what I see here. And unless there's some, real smoking gun that puts us in another direction, I think that this is going to be, put to bed as a suicide. However, there's still the investigation into those allegations of stalking, criminal mischief to the vehicle tires. There could be sexual abuse, physical abuse. So all of that still needs to be looked into.
You know, folks, one of the things that obviously it appears that John Paul Miller has an ironclad alibi and not being at the location. There's other factors proving that he didn't do it. But did he, in fact, drive his wife to do this? Were his actions and the way he acted? You noticed when the investigators asked him to come in and they would explain to him exactly what happened, he said, no, I'm not coming in. You know why he wasn't coming in? Because he was afraid he was going to get arrested.
Yeah.
You know? And his lawyer said, no, don't go in. Do not go in.
When she had the flat tires, they don't name who it was, but they believe the person who was stalking drove up and the police officer engaged that person. They don't name who it is. And then once she went to the tire repair place on the second time, that's when they found the tracking device. And I believe that's when she went for the order of protection. So, there was definitely a history here. If there is, anything that he's culpable for criminally, I think they could possibly go ahead with it. The fact that she's not alive anymore to be the complainant in the case, if you have enough evidence, you really don't need a complainant. The state can be the complainant. So maybe that's why certain things aren't being released at this point. There is still some investigation that definitely needs to be done. And one quick point, the investigators put a lot into this. Why would they want to steer this as a suicide as opposed to a homicide? If you have evidence of a homicide, you did all this investigation, you're going to want to put handcuffs on somebody and get justice for that victim. I don't think that they would put all this effort and energy into this investigation and say, you know what, let's just make it a suicide, even though it's a homicide. That's ridiculous. So I think, like I said, I'm okay. And I'm comfortable with the fact that they ruled it a suicide at this point.
Reverend Priscilla Avilis. So you're not satisfied that the investigation was thorough enough and that this is a self-inflicted gunshot wound.
I think it was the other way around, Billy. I think the two was the, because when you said it, you said the two was a suicide. I thought that's the way you said it.
No, it was the other way around.
Okay, I said it the other way around. I said one suicide, two, but I think you reversed it when you said it, Bill.
Well,
maybe she could put it in again. Let her put it in again, and we'll figure it out.
Everyone's going to revote. I see a lot of people. Most people put number one, put one in it, and that
one. What I said, we believed it was a suicide, and two, we believed it could be a homicide done by somebody else.
Susan G, I wonder if even though she was getting a divorce from him, she realized that her torture would never be over because he would never leave her alone. You know, Susan G, that's why we're saying that his conduct drove her to this. And someone in the chat just confirmed that he was the one stalking her, that she had an order of protection against him. My question is also is that if she pointed him out to the officer and she had a complaint against him, the officer could have locked him up right on the scene. He was on the scene following her. And I was, we're Monday morning quarterbacking. But, and then when she takes a car in to get the tires fixed and they discover the tracking devices, that's scary. That's a scary husband that's about to get divorced that doesn't want to accept this. Is he capable of anything at that point? Yeah, I think he is.
Billy, I had someone recently that had a domestic violence issue going on with tracking devices being put on their car. They contacted me for information. They were able to decipher from the tracking device where it was purchased. It was purchased on Amazon, and they even were able to figure out who purchased it. So there is records associated with these devices. Like you just said, if the police officers take this device, he came to the scene of the tire shop when she had gotten the flat. First, she had the flat. He was there. And then the person, they don't name him, but we think it's him, shows up at the tire shop. So how did he know? And that's when they find the tracking device. So there's enough there, I think, if they can track that device back to him being purchased with a credit card, let's say from Amazon, enough culpability. Not certain of what the laws are in North Carolina, South Carolina, with regard to stalking and surveillance. In New York, it's a felony for sure. You can't put a tracking device on someone's car without their permission or authority. So right there, he could have been arrested for that charge had they pursued that. Perhaps they were. And we do know that there was the order of protection and there was court proceedings. So there could be charges still coming forward, Bill.
Yeah, possibly. Lizzie Herzberger, JPM should still be a suspect, and no way was it a suicide. Mm-hmm. All right, Lizzie, I respect your opinion, but we're trying to show the evidence that exists. Jenny PC, sadly, I think it was suicide. She had enough and probably couldn't handle the stress any longer. He was a philandering husband, and she had enough. So sad. The other thing is that wasn't brought up today is that she came into his church when she was 14 years old. And it was raised and I think maybe even Lizzie Herzberger raised this. Was she groomed by him? She was underage at 14. You know, how long did this relationship go on before they got married? Again, he met her at 14, and she's looking at this all powerful pastor of her church, and then he probably exerted a lot of control over her. And then when he started losing her, he didn't want to accept it. But instead of him killing her, it appears that she took her own life because of the way she was being treated.
Bill, think about it. An authority figure from when she was 14 years old, very easy to gain some type of leverage over that person. And the other thing that I'm thinking about, he's got an affair going on with another woman. They're in divorce court. However, he's stalking her. So that's like a mind game in and of itself. Perhaps this is what was stressing her out. It was conflicting her because he wants me. He doesn't want me. He's got this other girl, but he wants me. Why is he following me? Why is he stalking me? Why is he giving me a flat? So all of that going on, and yet he has this other affair going on. He has, and they mention it in this. They don't say who it is, but they say that there was someone else. So with all of that said, you could clearly, clearly understand her being emotionally distressed, conflicted, and apparently suicidal. I have to disagree with Lizzie on this. That's my opinion, and I definitely respect hers. Investigations are usually quite thorough, and from what I'm seeing here, this looks like it was quite thorough. And I mentioned some of the reasons with regard to her going into the gas station to get gas. She had an opportunity if she was being leveraged or she's under duress to make a call for help there. She buys a drink. She buys the gun. She doesn't mention anything to the person in the pawn shop. So I really find it hard to believe that she was under duress at that point to do this. I wasn't in the car when she was making that 911 call, but we do have a witness that did hear the crying and stuff. And I don't think it doesn't sound like anyone else is in the background in that 911 call, but I'm certain that the investigators in this case did a thorough investigation.
Chaz Lightning, what about aggravated harassment given the tire deflation and tracking all of those things? She had two reports against him. In domestic violence, the acronym was HADOM: harassment, assault, attempted assault, disorderly conduct, reckless endangerment, and menacing. Those were the domestic violence crimes, and the assault could be a misdemeanor, of course, and a felony is automatic arrest. But those are the crimes in the domestic violence thing. So yeah, he could have been charged with all of them. And apparently, she had made two reports against him, according to our. Someone in the chat that knows the case. Mary Kylie, she was broke. So where did she get the money for the gun? She asked her friends for money for her car payment and tags. I don't know, Mary. Maybe she had a credit card or a debit card. And this was her very last purchase of her life, you know.
So, don't forget, too, in a pawn shop, Billy, a lot of times people, let's say they take a gun that's worth $500, they pawn it for $200, and then they don't come back to pay it. So now the pawn shop sells it, let's say, for $250. So maybe may not have been a lot of money either. You know, I mean, guns are very expensive today. But in that situation, a pawn shop, we don't know what the actual purchase price was. And maybe she, like you said, had a debit card or credit card or something of that nature, or did borrow money. So she asked. Apparently, that woman said that she asked for money for friends for car payments, so perhaps she did have money.
Lizzie Herzberger, she was probably purchasing a weapon for self-defense. Well, Lizzie, I think, you could think that, but I think it was clear why she purchased the weapon, because she intended to kill herself, and that's what she did.
I would think that when she's purchasing a weapon, she wouldn't tell a person in the pawn shop or in a gun shop, wherever, I'm buying this gun, so I'm going to kill myself. That's probably what she said, that she was doing it for self-defense. But, you know, Bill, in that thing that was on Facebook, that video, she didn't say she was in fear of her life. She did say she was stressed out about forced possible sexual stuff, forced drug use, alcohol abuse, physical abuse, mental abuse. So she didn't say she was in fear of her life. And I think that being engaged with the court system, since she did make reports and she did file for the order, I would think that something like that would have been asked or would have been stated in the police record. So I guess we just have to wait and see. But I really don't think it's anything more than a suicide based on what I'm seeing.
Passionate one for the truth. Maybe he didn't pull the trigger physically. He definitely drove her over the edge emotionally, mentally, and spiritually, and financially. He abused her. Passionate one for the truth, I happen to agree with you. As they say, you're preaching to the choir. With James, Pauline, it's already been confirmed by text from JP that he was tracking her and slashing her tires. So that's a sick dude, you know.
If that's confirmed, he should be getting charged for that too, Bill. You know, even though there's no complaining at this point, if they have enough information, state can be the complainant on that. And there may be charges coming forward.
He also lost his job as the pastor of that church. So whoever is the boss of that church, a Solid Rock Church in Myrtle Beach, he was relieved of his duties. Reverend Priscilla Avilis, there was an audio of the fisherman who was sharing about the incident on TikTok. Well, I think that guy's probably not just an ear witness. He's probably an eyewitness too. At least he was so close to it that he heard her crying. And then he heard a gunshot. So, he's probably, as I said, as well as an ear witness, he's an eyewitness.
He may be the one who found the purse too by the water's edge.
Right, exactly. Nancy Browning from the chat, maybe the dead airtime on 9/11 was the operator contacting police or emergency people out to help this woman. It very well could be, Nancy, but what we
didn't state the suicide until, you know, maybe 40, 50, 60 seconds into the call before she said that. That's, I think, the dead airtime. She was still looking for the location. But like I said, I don't want a Monday morning quarterback. But after she said, I'm going to kill myself, that was the time. That was go time.
The lady Kara from the chat. My thoughts also lead me to think she was trying to bring her husband's sins to light with her tragic passing. Shouldn't have to come to that if it were the case. Look, there's nothing good about this case. Everything on this about this case is so tragic. April Matosevic, that's better, right? Yeah, I don't think the hubby did it. She had opportunity to get help if she was being forced.
Yeah. I agree.
Well, as someone just raised the point that, yeah, he didn't physically pull the trigger, but he emotionally pulled the trigger. Raggedy Hobo, can't blame hubby unless he texted encouragement to her right before she made the choice. She was murdered by her fragile mind. Well, look, I don't think it's good to judge people that commit suicide. It's a person at the lowest point in their life that takes their own life. Whitey22. Words can hurt and make you feel worthless. It takes a toll and makes those affected do things to make a change. Isolating themselves, very sad. Yeah, I mean, this case is so sad. Passionate One for the Truth. He had her committed to a mental institution twice because she was talking too much about the skeletons in his closet, shaking my head. Wow. Well, look, I think that the police and the investigators will take... Reverend Priscilla Avilas, no, I don't think so. Her question is, do you think they will close this case with no further investigation? I do not believe that. I believe there will be much more investigation on this. They will dig deep. I think the community will demand that. I think the congregation of his church will demand that. And they're not going to just close this case. Schmitty. She had to feel in fear, perhaps from the divorce filing, she was getting out of a dangerous time. Absolutely, Schmitty. One of the most dangerous time is when a woman gets a divorce. Lizzie Herzberger, no, I'm not believing suicide. Just saying.
Okay. We respect that. You're entitled to your opinion.
Planetary Healer, cops are wrong all the time. Yes, you're right. They are. But this wasn't just the cops. This was the medical examiner went to the scene. So if you're implying a conspiracy, you think he was in on it? You know, the medical examiner is the one that said this was a self-inflicted gunshot wound. And he's the one that ruled on it, not the police. Suicide is rarely caused by a single circumstance or event. Instead, a range of factors at the individual relationship, community, and societal levels can increase risk. Erdum, too. You're 100% correct. Absolutely.
Bill, I just want to make one quick point about the cops being wrong all the time. Like I stated earlier, it looks like a lot of investigation went on in this case. They came up with a lot of specific facts. Those specific facts is what led them to conclude suicide. There's more work to be done. Like Billy said, I would be going to interview the location where John Paul was that day, who he was with, talking to that person. There's a lot more different things to do. And until you have a change in direction, physical evidence is there indicating a suicide. You have cameras. You have interviews of a possible eyewitness. You have the location where she stopped to buy the gas and the drink. There's going to be video cameras there. Was there someone else in the car with her? Was she alone? We believe she was alone. You have the pawn shop where she purchased the gun. We also have the cell phone. What went on in that cell phone? We know she did a search for a state park. Was there other things that she searched? Perhaps maybe a location in your body to shoot yourself. That's the quickest. I don't know. But all of those things are going to be put together. And they're going to be in the case folder, and that's how they're going to come to that conclusion. And as I stated earlier, if there was any indication of foul play or a direction pointing away from suicide and towards anyone, JP or anybody, I think the investigators would be inclined to go in that direction. And I think it would be much more satisfactory to arrest someone for a homicide of a victim with strong evidence, as opposed to ruling something a suicide that's maybe, maybe not. I don't see that here. I see this as a suicide. And I just feel so strongly about that because I was an investigator. I investigated these type cases. If things go in the direction of a homicide, or if there's evidence or indicators or, you know, some type of foul play, you go in that direction. And I wouldn't want to close a case until I knew it exactly, to the best of my ability, what happened in that case. And I don't think this is a closed case at this point. We think there's other things that need to be done. But based on this preliminary report that we have in front of us, I think it's pretty clear that it is a suicide.
So you guys convinced me I made a mistake. One was that the husband was involved in her death. Two was that she committed suicide.
Yeah, I said it the other way around in the beginning.
Somehow I switched it up. I apologize.
Yeah.
You know something, and someone that raised the greatest point in the chat that, you know, whether he pulled the trigger or not, he caused this.
He drove her to this.
He
had a hand in it.
But Jiria Brito, talking from experience, it's hard to believe it, but some medication for depression can cause serious side effects.
Absolutely.
Including suicidal thoughts. Rogeria, absolutely. You're 100% right. I wanted to play this because this is one of the better reports.
Yes. A waitress in South Carolina shared this receipt with us from a customer she served on February 23rd. Look closely. You see the customer was John Paul Miller, J.P. Miller, as he's been called. He left that waitress a huge tip, along with his phone number and a smiley face. This was just 2 months before his wife, Micah, filed for divorce. The waitress, who we're referring to only by her first name, Christiana, reached out to John Paul a few days later and had a casual text exchange with him. Afterward, though, she hit the brakes, she says, after some red flags surfaced about him. And then, last week, after Micah killed herself, Christiana reached out to him yet again, not revealing that she'd made the connection between him and his wife. And she was surprised at his response, to say the least. Christiana joins us now. Thanks so much for coming on the show. Let's just get right to it. You most recently texted him after you heard his wife was dead. What surprised you about his response?
Honestly, it didn't really surprise me all that much. I kind of suspected that it wasn't going to be what you would expect from a grieving husband.
What did he say?
I asked him if anything was new, and he more or less said, yes, lots new, LOL. I'll text later.
LOL? Laugh out loud?
Yes.
All right. And it's at that point that you said, okay, no more with this guy, right?
Actually, I was pretty aware of things from the beginning. I had some suspicions. There were some red flags. I did some research before I even texted him. And then after I did, I spoke with a friend of mine whose friend had a very negative experience, a mortifying experience, really, with him and his church.
What happened?
And that's her story to tell. I know that she witnessed some things that were not appropriate and faced some harassment when she tried to speak out about it.
So let's go back to, I want to show up that receipt again for that bill. When you waited on him, was he by himself?
He was with another man.
Okay. And we can see here the bill, he leaves you a $20 tip. Is that what it is?
Yes, it was almost a 50% tip.
A 50% tip. Was it clear to you what he meant by leaving a tip like that and with his phone number and a smiley face?
With the phone number and the smiley face included, I think it was pretty clear.
He wanted you to call him.
I would assume that's the implication.
All right. Then you guys exchanged a couple text messages in which he repeatedly asks you to send pictures of yourself.
Yes.
Including bikini pictures, and he called you super hot.
Yes.
Okay. At this point, do you think he's a single guy? Do you know he's married? What do you know about him at this point?
A lot of the things especially after the point that I talked to my friend, I was well aware. I hadn't confirmed everything or all of my suspicions until I talked to my friend. But after that point, I was pretty aware of what was up. And I feel like we have a rampant problem in our country and especially in our churches with this type of behavior. And I feel that it needs to be brought to light. So I saw an opportunity and I took it.
You got an opportunity to try and get proof that he was propositioning other women while married to his wife.
And the fact that he was a pastor approaching people in this manner.
Yeah. Was there any doubt in your mind what he was asking you for?
No, not at all.
And do you, did he ever ask to meet up with you, or did he just want you to send salacious pictures of yourself?
He mostly just seemed to ask for pictures. He didn't say anything about meeting up.
Okay. Bottom line, though, this is not the behavior you expect from a pastor, a married pastor, to be trying to hook up or get pictures from waitresses at restaurants.
Yeah.
So you did finally cut off communication with him after you got the proof you felt you needed. Why is that?
I didn't really have anything else to say to him until I found out what happened. And I just didn't say anything else to him until then.
Thanks so much.
Pretty horrific, right? I mean, the guy's a dirtbag.
Unethical behavior for a pastor, to say the least.
Well, if you know, some people in the chat that know the whole situation here are saying there is some SA going on with this pastor, and clearly he groomed Micah from the time she was 14 and married her, or was courting her while he was still married with five children. Apparently some in the chat have said that he was in fact the babysitter. So he, you know, people in positions like that have so much power over people that are their underlings, or people that are under them, or people that are part of their congregation. Think of the power. And, you know, these young women, she's 14 years old when she first comes in contact with this guy. He had been grooming her for a number of years, and maybe others also.
Yeah, that's pretty pretty dastardly. You know, authoritative figure. If she's 14 years old, you're here, you're listening to the pastor in the church talk about you know, the way life is and the good things in life, and you know, this is coming over, especially to a child, as an authoritative figure. And we've had cases in the past where religious pastors or mentors, they even have a bit of mind control over an adult figure. So in a situation like this, groomed her from when she was 14 years old. Just that interview right there with that waitress. I guess that's a kind of dirtbag kind of, you know, acting like a dirtbag, and especially the fact that he's a pastor. So it's unethical. I think it all just points to his character. I'm glad that they took him out of the church, that he's not going to be addressing the congregation there anymore. And I would think that with the investigation as it goes forward, there's a lot here. I still think that he could be in the trick bag for some charges.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think that he was probably advised by his attorney not to go in and have the police discuss with him, the husband, what occurred, because his attorney was probably thinking that they're going to get you in, and the next thing you're going to hear is click, click. Yeah. And you're going to feel some metal bracelets around your wrists.
The attorney probably told him, "Sta zit." In Italian, that means shut your mouth. That's what the attorney's going to tell you. Don't talk. Don't say nothing. You know, I'll do all the talking for you. So, and I guess that's probably why it was on his part. Maybe he had legal counsel at that point, and he didn't go to that interview with the police after she was found dead. I believe he also may have refused to be interviewed at some point. I think he cited an attorney. I thought I read that somewhere, but either way, you know, that's the advice that the attorneys give you. If you, you know, have something that you don't want to talk about, you invoke your right to counsel and you let me do the talking for you. So in Italian, like I said, start the Zeet. That means shut your mouth. And that's probably what the attorney told him.
Whit James, thank you very much for $4.99 super sticker. Very much appreciated. Yeah, I mean, there's so much more investigation necessary in this case, and not in regards. I feel it's clear. I'm satisfied that this was a self-inflicted gunshot wound. There's many out there who are not, and you can have your opinion. But that part of the investigation, I think, is closed. Did he drive her to this? Was she tortured? Was she mentally abused? Was she possibly physically abused? SA abused? Possibly all of those things. And that's ultimately what drove her to do this. And if she had mental health issues, surely this guy fed into them and was making them worse.
Yeah, Billy, you know, there's two subjects here that we tackle tonight, domestic violence and suicide. And those are both very, very tough subjects. We've done many cases where people were, most of them women, victims of domestic violence where they were murdered. So it's a prevalent problem in our society. Suicide is a prevalent problem in our occupation as law enforcement officers, and throughout other different walks of life, there's problems with suicide. Occupations, some of them have higher rates than others. As we know, law enforcement officers, I believe the statistic was 7 times more likely to commit suicide over another occupation. But either way, there's help out there. A lot of people, you know, maybe that 911 call was that last ditch cry for help. I don't want to put anybody, at a criticism, but that could have been, you know, she did stay on the phone for an extended period of time. I would have loved to have had the shot to try and talk her out of it at that point.
Me too. What the crock, as sad as it is, nobody knows how desperate someone is feeling when they decide to do it. She actually looked at ease in the video we saw. Yeah, I mean, look, I've been to far too many of these, and I've also had people that I work with had family members commit suicide, and try to comfort someone that's happened to. It's nearly impossible. Tamara Bullock. I had someone put tracking devices on my car and phone. I was almost totally broken until I pulled myself together and took charge of my life. This poor girl was driven to this. Tamara, you're so right. And, look, it sounded like she was getting her stuff together and, you know, getting the strength. She filed for divorce, so she took the steps necessary, but apparently she couldn't follow it all the way through. Nina Chandra. I've been so busy with school that I haven't been able to catch up on many crimes happening unless it's on Hero, Court TV, or Duty Run.
Thank you, Nina.
Rogerio Brito, she had a video on her Facebook page stating that she wasn't mentally okay, and there was a lot going on. That's why she was away for a little while. Yeah, I mean, she was an open book. She was out there. You know, she put her stuff out there, and we all wish that someone could have helped her. You know, someone would have came to her defense. Mel, he was involved because he coerced her. He broke her down to the point where she felt there was no way out. Yeah, I
could think be something to that.
You guys are all right. Phil, you know, I think we pretty much covered this. I think we need to just say how sorry we are to the family of Micah, and how sorry we are to the community, and that, you know, suicide is never a good option. It's a horrific thing, and there's no coming back from it, you know, once that decision is made. Phil, your final thoughts.
Final thoughts. You said it earlier. I said it. It's a permanent decision for a temporary situation. That cannot be stressed enough. Suicide is not the answer. There are many, many support groups. There are safety nets for suicide as well as domestic violence. I'm kind of tired of doing these shows about cases of domestic violence where people wind up either killing themselves or they're murdered. We know from people that have come on the show There is definitely support groups. You can reach out for help. Just Google it if you have. If you're near a phone or a computer, Google it. If you're in a domestic violence situation, we always say run away, get out of it, get away from the abuser. If you're on the edge and you're talking about suicide, make a call, even if it's a 911 call. Hopefully you'll get somebody that'll put you in touch, or the suicide hotline is there. There's many, many people that want to help. I just want to offer my condolences again to Micah Miller and her family. And, you know, one is too many in this situation. Let's hope and pray that there could be a silver lining in this. Perhaps, you know, someone can maybe start a support group in that area, a suicide prevention group, a domestic violence group. You know, that's what we try to do when these things happen. We try to figure out how to prevent them and maybe help people that are in these situations. You know, when you're near the edge, you're in a dark place, and you need that person that can pull you back. And unfortunately, in this case, it just didn't happen.
Absolutely. Reverend Priscilla Villas, thank you for the $2 super sticker. Much appreciated. Folks, you know, we try to bring our knowledge and our humanity to this. It's really, as Sherry Boyle says, so very sad she didn't get the help she needed to feel safe and empowered. Rest in peace, Micah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Sherry Boyle. Very, very well said. I'm just saying we try to lend our expertise and our experience to this, but no one ever can get used to someone committing suicide. And it's, every time it occurs, it's a horrible situation. Anyway, folks, thank you so much for tuning in tonight. This is a very important topic. And all we can say is Micah Miller, may she rest in peace, and her family rest in peace. Prayers to her and her family. Have a great night, everyone, and God bless.
Stay safe, everyone.